You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Where this is the Space Show. The United States, United Kingdom and Australia last week agreed to accelerate their Deep Space Advanced Radar capability to identify emerging threats in space. The first radar site in Western Australia is to be operational in 2026. In other news, on Monday, the Australian newspaper claimed Defence has spent $40 million on two satellites it doesn't know what to do with. And that is because the government has downgraded plans to develop sovereign space capabilities. Two Airbus Arrow 150 satellites are being assembled in Florida for delivery next year for the now-cancelled Starshot program. The satellites will be placed into storage after that cancellation. Each of the satellites were to have been outfitted with payloads designed by Australian industry to provide space-based surveillance, positioning and secure communications capabilities. Over on Sky News Australia, Andrew Bolt and Greg Sheridan were outraged by the cancellation of the Starshot program. Let's take a listen.
We've had so much wasted spending on our Australian Defence Force. Spending on the wrong things, not enough on the right things. Now another shocking example. The Australian newspaper has now reported that Defence spent $40 million of your money on two satellites. Two satellites it now doesn't know what to do with because the Starshot program they were bought for has been scrapped. These are satellites that were meant to give our Defence Forces space-based surveillance, right? They float in the sky, help them with positioning, watching, secure communications. In fact, the Chief Defence Scientist last year said these were critical. So critical, they've now been dumped into storage. That's where they're going. Joining me is the country's top foreign affairs writer, Greg Sheridan of the Australian newspaper. Greg, I mean, you've had plenty to say on the show, in your columns in the Australian, about how badly we've equipped our armed forces with the wrong weapons, with weapons too late. How about this waste?
Well, Andrew, it's great to be with you as ever, but this is just another of the Keystone Cops pantomime folly of this government. Ed Husic, the industry minister, is a shockingly bad minister, even by the standards of the Albanese government. He just straight out abolished a $1.2 billion program for Australia to build and launch its own surveillance satellites, which would have been terrific for our military and had all kinds of other uses. At the same time, Defence bought for $350 million an already obsolete sky drone, massively over-designed, which the Americans have just cancelled. They're not going to buy any more of them because the Iranians have shown they can shoot them down. Defence did this partly because it's underspending its budget, because there's such paralysis and confusion brought about by the Albanese government's inability to do anything except have reviews in defence. So defence will be a couple of $100 million short in its spend, and it's wasted $350 million on a bit of technology which is already obsolete. For that money alone, you could have kept the satellite program going, and then we would have had these satellites in space providing this terrific surveillance and getting us into space technology. Instead of which, Richard Marles goes overseas. He travels even more than Albanese. He loves this defence diplomacy. And he's made another U-Boot fabulous high-tech announcement with the Americans and the Brits about looking into artificial intelligence one day down off in the future, who knows when. Meanwhile, we've scrapped the one existing real program we actually had. Why did Husic scrap it? As far as we can tell, it's because it was a coalition program started before he came to office.
Greg, how can a program go from critical, according to the chief defence scientist last year, to let's just chuck it in the the junk pile this year? I mean, I just don't get it. I totally don't get it.
Well, that's, Andrew, because you have this terrible disability of operating by reason and common sense. You know, that's got nothing to do with this government's approach to defence policy. It operates by fantasy and pantomime and pretend announcements. So every nation that has any serious capability manufactures and launches its own surveillance satellites. That's kind of entry level. You know, it's like when you finally earn a decent income and you buy your first luxury car, it's always a Beamer. You know, that's gets you into the club. So we decided to abolish this because Ed Husic couldn't bear to implement a coalition program. And instead, we're doing nothing now for space satellites, but we claim we're going to be a high-tech, you know, we claim we're going to be building nuclear-powered submarines in a few years in Adelaide. We can't even build a surveillance satellite like half the countries on Earth can build. I mean, it's beyond a joke. It's beyond parody.
And two of those countries on Earth that can build surveillance satellites was North Korea. We mentioned that last week. And, of course, the South Korean spy satellite with which the Australian Spirit satellite was launched at the weekend. Well, those were the views of Andrew Bolt and Greg Sheridan, and not necessarily those of the Space Show or of Southern Community Broadcasters. As of this afternoon, the Defence Science Technology Group website still lists Resilient Multi-Mission Space Starshot as an active program. The contract to Airbus for two Arrow 150 satellites was let last year, in July, to a value of over $20 million. And I think that's $20 million per satellite on but it's the website's not clear. How much over the over that price, the DSD website does not say. Now, at the time of the contract, DSTG said that in total, the Airbus partnership represents an investment of more than $40 million in satellite technologies. One thing puzzles the Space Show. The Sky News discussion said the satellites were in Florida. Well, in August last year, DSTG said that they were being built at Adelaide's Australian Space Park. Well, Rod Smith is the leader of the Resilient Multi-Mission Starshot program at DST, and in 2021, he had this to say about the project.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for the opportunity today to have a chat about this Space Starshot. So what I'm going to talk today, as the title says, they talk about our Space Starshot and hopefully give you a bit of an oversight, a little bit of the challenges that we're facing within the space area and the space, what we call the space domain here in defence. But obviously space is absolutely critical, not only to defence, but it's actually critical to Australia and our national well-being and economy. We wouldn't be having this conversation today if we didn't have space services where we can relay information around the globe or across Australia at the very least. You wouldn't have easy access to banking services. Our critical infrastructure would fail. You wouldn't be able to use Google Maps to navigate your way around. So space is important to us as a nation. It's also really important to us as defence. We cannot operate. It is a critical to the way defence is and needs to continue to operate into the future, particularly as it gets more congested and contested. That's why defence is investing in sovereign space capabilities. And it's really about improving the resilience and self-reliance of our space capabilities, because we are largely a space-dependent defence force, and we really want to transition or transform from being space-dependent to space-enabled. And actually, the human side of that is going to be really important, because what we really are looking at is autonomous satellites, smart satellites operating together, but doing that in a human-machine teaming construct into the future. At the same time as we acknowledging how critical space is for Australia, it's also becoming increasingly congested, contested and competitive. What do I mean by that? Yeah, everyone would have quite a lot of you, I'm sure, would have seen the recent anti-satellite test that Russia undertook, where it shot, I wouldn't say shot down, destroyed a satellite in space and probably generated somewhere between 10 and 100,000 pieces of new bits of space junk in space, most of which over time will decay. But we're still seeing the ramifications of that with impact to the International Space Station and to other satellite systems, including interplanetary missions where people are using the Earth for gravity assist. So that is one of the big challenges. Not only are we putting more stuff in space, we're actually putting more junk in space as well and more debris and those type of tests. So it's increasingly becoming challenging for us. It's contested in the sense that we are getting more and more, defence and other capabilities in space that are being disrupted or at least attempted to be disrupted. So people are actively looking at ways to deny everybody's space capabilities because space is so critical to everybody's nations. And again, not just from defence, but from a national perspective. And that's where it gets into the competitive side of things. There is increasing competition amongst nation states in between companies. We see Elon Musk with Starlink. We see Airbus with the OneWeb constellations. There are a lot of competition going on within the space community as well and across governments and industry to do the next big thing in space. And we're no different in that sense. And I've just mentioned Elon Musk and others. Space is being disrupted. There are a whole bunch of new technologies and approaches being taken. Defence traditionally is a lot on large, exquisite capabilities where we have privileged access. But we are looking at what's going on with, the Elon Musk of the world, where we are developing new technologies and new ways of doing business that are going to change the way we operate in space, change the way we then operate on Earth. And then how do we then pivot and position and change the way we do business and bring our warfighter, our defence folk and our nation along on that journey with us? And that's going to be hopefully a challenge that this community can contribute to. We're talking about really looking at where defence needs to position itself into that future blended architecture where you have the exquisite military capabilities, where we are leveraging off those commercial capabilities, but also what's called new space, this whole new technology disruptions going on. And where does defence play within that space? And these are all open questions at the moment. What's the mix? How do we bring that hybrid mixed architecture together to allow us to continue to deliver Earth observation capabilities, or what's called ISR, Defence Intelligence Surveillance Reconnaissance, our space services such as satellite communications and precision navigation and timing, so your GPS, your timing signals that allows all the infrastructure to work. How do we do space situational or space domain awareness, as we're now calling it? How do we do space traffic management and know what's going on in space so that we can ensure that we have that good policy where we are responsible operators in space, but also we are diligent in our understanding of what others might be doing to us? And at the same time, there is a big increase, certainly since 2019, with government policy focused on developing sovereign space capability. So there is very much a focus on trying to bring Australian industry along with us on the ride. We have some mature capabilities already in Australia, some people with some very good sovereign space capabilities, but also there's a very large and growing emerging sovereign space sector, in some ways quite a startup space sector, and how do we work with them and bring everybody along? So what's this Starshot about? We are about looking at about how we provide those future space services to defence in a contested operating environment. And the way we want to do that, we're looking at putting together exemplar technologies and systems, getting them into space and working with those ground segment parts of those space segments where the humans will be on the ground and the space segments will be autonomous. And how we effectively provide a space cloud that allows us to deliver those trusted and assured services directly to our folks and to our equipment as our operating comes from a number of elements. We're talking about there having smart satellites in space, small smart satellites. And we're looking at how can we grow our space capabilities. Most of our, I don't know if people realise, but most of the work that we've been doing in Australia up to now with putting stuff into orbit has either been putting, doing components that or pieces of kit that have gone onto other people's satellites, or building our own small capabilities. DSTG, for example, started a program called Buccaneer in 2014, and we orbited a small CubeSat, which is about the size of a loaf of bread in space, and that operated for just over a year quite successfully. And we're about to do another mission in another year or so, the main mission. And others have been doing that. Some of the universities, New South Wales and Skycraft, Curtin University with the BNAR constellation, and others have been putting small CubeSats together. But what we're going after is probably moving up in class to around about 200 kilograms, up to 200 to 300 kilograms perhaps, looking at those sort of things which we think are affordable that Australia can reasonably aspire to as tranches of future operational capability. And so the question is, we need to get them into space. We need to get them in the space to actually achieve a function. And that function needs to be interacting with our defence forces and the people operating those that equipment, whether they be planes, ships, or on the ground. And so it is very much a human dimension there. And then we need to have humans in control of that network. And humans, not only, it's not going to be a set and forget them. We need to be able to interact with those systems agilely, update them as things fail or people try and disrupt our services, and being able to dynamically update those and operate very quickly and respond to those threats. I would say the final thing there in regards to this, we talked about constellations and things there. If you think in orbit, low Earth orbit, satellites move between 7 and 8 kilometres per second. So if you have another satellite coming at you or a piece of space junk as small as perhaps a fleck of paint moving at 7 to 8 kilometres per second, your closing speeds are between 14 and 16 kilometres per second. It's a highly dynamic and highly destructive environment. And so how do we have humans in that sort of highly dynamic environment? We need to be agile and monitor and continue to, I suppose, operate those space systems, assure those space services, and deliver those space effects for our warfighter is what we're on about. So I want to talk a bit about the delivery strategy now. We really have 4 pillars at the moment, and what we mean by that. One of the things, of course, is that Australia has come quite late to the party. Our space agency was established in 2019. New Zealand established theirs in 2016, as did Nigeria. So it's been a long time coming that we finally have a civilian space agency, and they certainly are leading the way in defining, I suppose, the overall national space strategy going forward, and Defence is working very closely with them. The second bit is we are, and this part of the reason I'm talking today, is we are looking at developing and testing new technologies and capabilities, and that's through the Next Generation Technologies Fund. And, of course, the HIPAANet activity comes under that banner from a human performance perspective. There is a space capabilities theme under the Next Generation Technologies Fund. There's a multidisciplinary material sciences theme. There's an artificial intelligence theme. All of those things we're looking at and working with to help pull together what we need to do in that future sort of space innovation program that we're putting in place and have put elements of that in place already. And that includes the SmartSat Cooperative Research Centre, which is based here in Adelaide, which is really that sort of innovation centre that's helping drive and do some of that sort of low technology levels development for smart satellites in the future. And we're working, obviously, with them very closely and driving that some of those programs forward to help satisfy our needs as well as more generally Australia's. Indicative program, what we're looking at, the bottom left, you can see some of those CubeSats. The very bottom left graphic is actually the Buccaneer CubeSat that we're hoping to orbit fairly soon. But move it from that sort of toaster size spacecraft up to about a refrigerator size spacecraft, if you want to put it in context in terms of size. But we are looking at our first mission in 2024. We are looking at a multi-mission small satellite. And then moving through and doing increasing degrees of complexity to get us to that sort of space cloud demonstration, that 2028-29 period. But what we want to do, and the key thing, of course, is the exemplar missions are really only the outcomes of the research. So putting in place that integrated research program in a way that builds capability through those missions and being able to demonstrate those missions as we go and having those missions operate not just as individual missions but operating with partners and also interacting through exercises, through experimentation programs, those sorts of things are going to be really important to us moving forward. Starlink is talking about a 12,000 satellite constellation. You cannot have that monitored or, sorry, not monitored, but managed individually by humans. We need to be able to move to autonomous control, but we're still going to have to have humans monitoring those things. So how do you mitigate those negative impacts of the biases, the workloads and the fatigues? Because we do need to maintain 24/7, 365 day a year operations to support our warfighters. And they are even more so operating in much more challenging environments as well. And we need to be conscious of the end user at the end of the day. This is about the end user at the end of the day.
That's Rod Smith, the leader of Starshot at the Defence Science Technology Group in Adelaide. And I should explain that STAR, S-T-A-R, stands for Science, Technology and Research. And SHOT means a significant military capability challenge. Now, he mentioned there the Buccaneer satellite that was launched 6 years ago. And then there are four satellites called Resilient Multi-Mission Space that were to be built. In 2024, RMS-1, a multi-mission small satellite, was to go up. And in 2025 or 2026, RMS-2 would be an enhanced satellite. Then in 2027 or 2028, there would be RMS-3, which was both enhanced and semi-autonomous. And finally, in the series, in 2028 or 2029, RMS-4, the Resilient Autonomous Multi-Mission, would be going up. And here's Rod again.
If I take the Next Generation Technologies Fund's space capabilities theme, there is a program under there. There's a research network called the Advanced Radio Frequency Payload Research Network, where we're looking at maritime surveillance using synthetic aperture radar. The reason we're doing that is that provides all-weather capability and lends itself quite well, and day-night capability as well. So it lends itself to providing comprehensive maritime surveillance wherever and whenever you need it from space. That research network has been stood up. It's in phase one at the moment. They're about to go into phase two, hopefully, where they're going to move forward into designing a prototype sensor. So they're going to go through a designing and prototyping phase and take the best ideas from the partners that are involved in that activity to develop that space prototype. And then from my perspective, from the Starshot perspective, my aim is to integrate that onto a satellite system and take that into space and have that operating in space in conjunction with a digital twin system here on Earth and dynamically and rapidly changing things. We want to try a new waveform in the signal generator. We want to try a new algorithm that people have developed. We want to try a new way of interacting with that system, delivering services to someone directly in a very remote location, for example. So they're the sort of things that sort of technology maturation could occur through this Starshot. And I hope that people have got other ideas and thoughts as we move forward. Indicative program, what we're looking at, the bottom left, you can see some of those CubeSats. The very bottom left graphic is actually the Buccaneer CubeSat that we're hoping to orbit fairly soon. But move it from that sort of toaster size spacecraft up to about a refrigerator size spacecraft, if you want to put it in context in terms of size. But we are looking at our first mission in 2024. We are looking at a multi-mission small satellite. And then moving through and doing increasing degrees of complexity to get us to that sort of space cloud demonstration, that 2028-29 period. But what we want to do, and the key thing, of course, is the exemplar missions are really only the outcomes of the research. So putting in place that integrated research program in a way that builds capability through those missions and being able to demonstrate those missions as we go and having those missions operate not just individual missions but operating with partners and also interacting through exercises, through experimentation programs. Those sorts of things are going to be really important to us moving forward.
Speaking in 2021, that was Rod Smith, the leader of the Starshot group at the Defence Science Technology Group in Adelaide. And as we've been reporting, it appears this program may have been cancelled. Now, Airbus had been named last year as the contractor for the Resilient Multi-Mission Project. At 150 kilograms mass each, the satellites were considered by many in the space industry as too large for the task. The critics said CubeSats would be more suitable. Now, the article on page 3 of Monday's The Australian newspaper also resolves something that has long puzzled us here at the Space Show. At the time, the $1.2 billion National Space Mission for Earth Observation was cancelled by Federal Minister Ed Husic. We were unable to find anyone who would tell us what the heck was going on. We deduced that the mission had been cancelled because the funding disappeared in May from the federal budget papers, but no one would confirm it. Indeed, a spokesperson for Mr. Husik told The Space Show that there had been no change to the previous Liberal government's budget. And we mentioned this on our May the 10th program. Well, here's a quote from Monday's The Australian, and I quote, "Documents released under Freedom of Information laws showed Mr. Husik's office instructed Australian embassy officials not to tell the Biden administration about the cancellation of the $1.2 billion National Space Mission for Earth Observation Program." End of quote. Also, on page 19 of Monday's The Australian, there was an article about the Norman Drive that also discusses what the paper claims is, and I quote, "A further $77 million was stripped from other space industry initiatives, including a program to help space organizations get a foothold in the global supply chain through NASA's flagship Moon to Mars program, and a co-investment program in spaceports and rocket launch facilities in Australia." End of quote. Now, on our Space Show program of July the 26th, we reported that a hyperspectral scanner called CyanoSat 1.0 was in space as a payload aboard one of the Skycraft aeronautical satellites launched on June the 12th. Now, we have asked Skycraft at least twice which satellite this CyanoSat is on, and no one will say exactly which of the four Skycraft satellites is hosting this CSIRO instrument. But we do have reason to believe it's either Skycraft 3A or Skycraft 3B. Whatever, yesterday it was reported that CyanoSat has captured its first image. Now, CyanoSat was built by researchers at the University of Adelaide to differentiate harmful cyanobacteria from other algae in coastal and inland water bodies as part of a CSIRO program. This is The Space Show.